Welcome to the Battle of the Brothers, Utah Utes and BYU Football Podcasts, where two brothers, one a true blue BYU Cougars fan, the other a diehard Utes fan, battle it out about BYU Cougars and Utah Utes football. I'm your host, C-Double, so let me introduce you to our battling brothers, our BYU fanboys, TC. What's up, TC?
Yeah, proud to be a Coug this week, boys.
And our Utes diehard is K-Ray. What's cracking, K-Ray?
Game pretty fuss as usual, but a little down this week. Not happy.
Just a little. What a wild weekend it was, boys. A wacky and wild weekend indeed. So, TC, you got to be happy about BYU's win over 6th-ranked Wisconsin. Give us the goods, man. What say ye?
Well, not only 6th-ranked Wisconsin, but 6th-ranked Wisconsin on the road, Camp Randall Stadium. I mean, one of the biggest wins probably in BYU history. So, very, very happy. I don't think, I mean, even the most diehard of BYU fans didn't think we were going to win. Man, we pulled it out. I said last week it was going to be a lot closer than people thought, just because I thought Wisconsin's strengths played into their offensive strengths, at least played into our defensive strengths. And I think that's what you saw on the field. We're really good at stopping the run, and probably not so good at stopping the pass. But, you know, as we saw leading in, I mean, Wisconsin heavily relied on the run with Jonathan Taylor. And that gave us a chance to win the game. Now, look, if you look at the overall statistics, they outrushed us. They outpassed us. They had more time of possession. They had more first downs. But there were two things that were in our favor. The first is they had more penalties than us. And the second is they had more turnovers. So we limited the mistakes. Tanner came in and essentially did what he was asked to do, which was don't lose the game, manage the game, keep us in it. And that's exactly how it played out. So really, really happy with the outcome, obviously, to say the least. Our kicking game, 1 for 2, but both were pretty long tries. I think we missed on a 50-plus yarder, but then we made the game-winning field goal in the fourth quarter. I will say it was a little nerve-wracking to see Satake call the 2 timeouts. It brought back flashes of the Miami Beach Bowl when Bronco used his timeouts to ice a PAT, but this was not a PAT. This was a legitimately long field goal. And he actually said something to the reporter after the game that I thought was interesting. He said that, you know, I called the 2 timeouts and then I wanted the kicker to think that I was about to call the 3rd timeout. And it actually makes, you know, a lot of sense. If you're a kicker out there, you're thinking, okay, am I about to kick this? Am I not? You're looking over the sidelines. You're thinking, you know, are they going to blow the whistle, you know, right before the snap? So, you know, who knows if that played a role. But you know, bottom line is it worked out. So he deserves the credit for doing it, because he certainly would have gotten the blame had it not worked out. I thought the play calling was pretty good. The jet sweeps in the first half really, really had Wisconsin confused. We kind of went away from that in the second half. I don't know if that was by design, but certainly was a good game plan coming in, and it was just enough to hang on for the victory by literally, you know, feet. So very happy with the outcome, and you know, it's not just a season booster. This is a program booster. I mean, again, we'll talk about this, I think, in a little bit. But, you know, this is one of the all-time wins for BYU.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely some great points you made there. Absolutely. Now, K-Ray, I'm sure you're thrilled at BYU's win. Why don't you give us your take on that?
Did BYU play last Saturday? look, I'm still recovering from my own team's loss, but let me say this. I could not have imagined a scenario in which BYU went into Camp Randall and won that game. I bought into the Wisconsin hype, which every time Wisconsin football is hyped, they always disappoint. at least their own fan base. They don't disappoint me. I could care less about Wisconsin football, frankly. But it was a great game for BYU. I think that Tanner was a little underwhelming. He had 89 yards on 12 of 22. And he averaged 4 yards a completion. Not fantastic. Not great, obviously. But Squally Canada, another really good game. 2 touchdowns. And then the defense played pretty well, I guess. I thought that Wisconsin did not exploit Jonathan Taylor nearly as much as they could have. He averaged almost 5 yards a carry. And on their last touchdown, they just marched down the field off of the right hand side of the offensive line, and BYU couldn't answer, and Jonathan Taylor just took over on that drive, and I don't know why they went away from it. Look, I'm a big Kalani Sitake fan. Whether or not he coached at Utah or not, obviously that's how I was introduced to him and why I like him. But you have to admire his passion and how much he cares and how much he wants to win. You can see it on his face. When a call goes against him, you can see it almost physically hurts him. And when his team does something well and they make a good play, you can see it in his body language, how happy he is for his players and happy for Kalani. I'm not going to lie. It was a really, really good game by BYU. I agree. This is a huge deal for the entire program. After the loss to Cal, the Arizona win seemed like not that big of a deal. When Arizona got whooped by Houston, and then BYU lost to Cal, to go into Wisconsin, top 10 team, and win. Great, great victory for the Cougars, no question.
Yeah. No denying it was a great victory. I bought into the Wisconsin hype. You guys heard me on episode 1. I thought they were going to be in the playoffs. So, yeah, I mean, it was a shocker for everyone. But I give TC credit. I mean, he kind of called out some key factors that actually played out in the game that played a role in their win, and that was really, really interesting. Now, I mean, BYU dominated the line of scrimmage. Like, did you see both offense and defense? Did you see Wisconsin's big boys on the bench? Like, the starting O-line was actually benched. I mean, that was nuts. So, of course, you know, Sitake's decision to mess with the kicker's mind and call 2 timeouts to ice him, but not the third. I mean, I was screaming and yelling at the TV when he did that. I mean, I was going nuts. I'm like, how are you going to throw this game away on this? And it turned out to be a genius move. I mean,
even the announcers were saying, what is he doing?
Yeah.
But like I said, he would have gotten the blame had it not worked out. So he certainly deserves the credit because it did.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the way, as now looking back, it worked out. I mean, he looks like a genius. So it was good to see BYU finally have things come together. I mean, Tanner Mangum, that performance is not going to get it done in future games, but you know they find a way to kind of make up for that. So we'll see if that continues. But it was definitely a program changer. Absolutely, I could not agree more. So TC, where does this game rank in greatest BYU wins of all time?
Yeah, so just 2 points. K-Ray mentioned, you know, Kalani's passion. I've met Kalani. I've talked with him. And he that couldn't be truer. I mean, he when he says he bleeds blue, I mean, that's true. He lives for BYU football since he's been very young. So it's almost refreshing to have a coach on the sideline that is that passionate and cares that much. I mean, you root for him because of that. So reiterating that point, and also Kerry mentioned 12 for 22, 89 yards, probably not going to cut it against every opponent, but he limited the mistakes. You know, there was a couple times where he could have been sacked, especially five where, you know, to get the field goal, he got the ball, you know, out of bounds, so it didn't take the sack, no turnovers. So look, I've been saying, you know, Wilson should have a chance, but, you know, to Mangum's credit, he did just enough to win. So again, he also gets some credit. So, yeah. So after the game, you know, there were a lot of commentators saying that this is one of the top five victories of all time for BYU. So just, I looked back and kind of jotted down my own thoughts, and here's where I think it ranks. Number one is Michigan Holiday Bowl 1984. No doubt that game wins the national championship for us. I mean, that's the greatest BYU game ever, period, dot, the end. Until we win another national championship, that's etched in stone. Number two, I've got the second greatest game of all time. Miami comes to town. You know, Detmer upsets them. That was big. Number three, first game ever on ESPN at Pitt. Number three ranked in the country. Again, people say, you know, what's the famous quote? Who did BYU play? You know, Bo Diddley Tech that year. No, they actually won at Pitt, the number three ranked team in the country. So that's in essence should silence a lot of doubters there. Number four, I got the Miracle Bowl versus SMU. And it really was a Miracle Bowl. If you've never watched the fourth quarter of that game, you're watching that game and you're thinking there's no way BYU can come back, but they do. Number five, 1997 Cotton Bowl to end the 1996 season, ranked in the top five. Number six was I got the 1979 game versus Texas A&M, and that was really kind of the coming out party for Lavelle when it kind of put BYU on the map and kind of alerted national observers to BYU football. Number seven, this is when things start to get a little fuzzy, but I've got Beck to Harleen 2006 BYU Utah. That is the iconic moment for BYU in the rivalry.
That is fuzzy. You're right. That is fuzzy.
Yeah, so I've got number nine was the 2009 win versus Oklahoma. A lot of people say, well, that wasn't a road win. That was in Texas, neutral field. No, I mean, that was a road win for BYU. I've got number nine. I've got number nine as 2000 Lavelle's last game. I mean, just because it was Lavelle's last game and the theatrics that ensued, the comeback in the fourth quarter to beat Utah. If it wasn't Lavelle's last game, probably doesn't make the top 10. And then the number 10 game I have this last game, Wisconsin, I think that matches up to the top 10. Probably, I would say, the fourth greatest upset in BYU history behind the Pitt, behind the Miami, and behind the Oklahoma game I just mentioned, probably the fourth greatest upset of all time and number 10. But honorable mention, you got a lot of options. The TCU game in 2006, the 2001 game versus Utah, where I was at that game, so that probably gets a little more credit than it deserves. Just because, I mean, that stadium was, I've never seen a more electrifying stadium. And then, of course, the fans rushed the field in the infamous security incident that ensued on the field afterwards. But a lot to choose from, but I think the Wisconsin game does reach top.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's big. That's big. I mean, I would agree. It was huge. I think the biggest factor in this win was the timing of it all and just how BYU's program has just kind of been on a downward spiral. And to win in at this time on the road against, you know, such a powerhouse team, it's huge. Now, don't you have some inside information about the infamous events that happened with the security situation that unfolded after that BYU game that you just mentioned?
Yeah, so I knew somebody that was pretty closely involved, but maybe that's something that we talk about next week because it'll be a bit of a down week, at least for BYU, we hope. But for Utah, they have a bye, so maybe we tease that out.
All right. So, yeah, a lot of BYU fans don't remember that game, but TC is going to give us some insider secret information into the what happened with the security there, so that should be interesting. All right, so we got BYU info down. Now, let's get flirty with the dirty here. K-Ray, give us a skinny on what happened to the Utes versus the number 10 ranked Washington Huskies.
Oh boy. Well, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Where do I start? Do I start with the coaching? Do I start with the refereeing? Do I start with the fumbles? Do I start with our receivers and tight ends' inability to catch passes? There's a lot of places to go here. It's not a good week to be a Ute. That was tough, and it's really just, you know, made all the worse by the fact that we have a bye week now. So we have 2 weeks to sit and just marinate in it and waste away. A bye week is so fun when you win the week before, when you're undefeated. When you lose a game that you could have won, it's bad. It's no fun. I don't like to pick on 20-year-old kids that are out there giving it their all. So I don't want to name too many names. Last week I did say that Huntley is not a great dual threat quarterback because he never runs and he's not a great passer. This week, I think he proved me right again, although he did have a couple of scampers for a first down or two, which was nice to see. It was nice to see that part of this game. I think he had 40 yards or so rushing, which we'll take, right? He had one of about 28 yards or so, which was nice to see. But his passing is not good, and it's made worse by the fact that our receivers can't hold on to the ball. And when they do catch the ball, they fumble it. Not to name any names, but Bronson Boyd and Britton Covey both lost a fumble. Let me say this about Britton Covey. All right, for goodness sakes, the guy gives everything he has. He sacrifices everything. He's our only receiver that can catch the ball, clearly. But I think the coaching really let us down. I really do. Watching the game a second time, it just seemed to me that Washington came to take care of business. Like, they were on a business trip. And Utah was a little lackadaisical, a little bit not as focused as they should be. And one play in particular brought that to mind, and it was the really fairly long touchdown run by Myles Gaskin, where he was being chased down the sideline by two Utes, and they had the angle, and they just kind of lazily pushed him out of bounds, and he said, forget it, and he just took off flying through the air and got the nose of the football over the pylon for the touchdown. And you could see the Utah defenders like, wow, I can't believe he just did that. And we were dropping passes, really frustrating. I think it's worth mentioning the targeting calls. We did not lose this game because of officiating. But the second targeting call on Leiky Fotu was ridiculous. He didn't even hit him with his helmet. That's why you look at replay for these things. And on that play, Cody Barton intercepted the pass from Browning. We would have had the ball. And instead, we get called for targeting when we didn't even hit them. We didn't even hit Browning on the helmet. It was so ridiculous. The first one on Marquise Blair, I don't think that should have been called either. But you can kind of see the refs are like, well, it was helmet to helmet. We got to try to protect these guys. This has been ingrained in us all preseason. We got to make these calls. I can almost see why they called that targeting. Gaskin was between the tackles, shouldn't have been called, and it was just a form tackle. The Gaskin kind of got his head in the way there, but I get it. I can almost see it. But the second one, come on, man. That's game changing stuff right there. That was tough. That was tough. Pita Tonga interception, rumbling and tumbling down to the 11-yard line before he loses it out of bounds. Goodness sakes, what defensive linemen shouldn't be making interceptions anyway? So good for him. Good for him, right? He got us down there where we should have scored. On that last play, Tyler Huntley, it was 4th and 2, 4th and 1. We had to get to the 1-yard line for a first down or just score a touchdown with 2 yards left. He the perfect play to the tight end, and I don't know. I mean, Tyler Huntley, he thought he was Nolan Ryan. He thought he was Aroldis Chapman. I don't know what happened. I mean, he reared back and threw that sucker. What are you doing, man? Right? Our tight end should have caught it. Connor Holler should have caught it. I mean, I think us three could have caught it. Well, I don't know. I don't know about TC. CW, you and I could have caught it, all right? It should have been caught. But still, man, just put a little touch on that sucker. Tyler, just give your boy an easy catch. We weren't focused. Now, if there's an upside, and there are two upsides, but if there is an upside, it's our offensive line finally got their act together a little bit more. Zach Moss averaged 5 yards a carry, which begs the question, why didn't he run more? But that is what it is. They say he was dinged up a little bit. Great. Put Armon Shine in. Let's run it at these guys. If we're averaging 5 yards a carry, Zach Moss averaged 5 yards a carry. Armon Shine averaged 7 yards a carry. Let's run it, guys. Offensive line played well, and of course our linebackers Chase Hansen, Cody Barton, they're just great. They really were. And I was actually looking. I was comparing our defensive statistics to Auburn's defensive statistics. Washington obviously played Auburn. First game of the season, and we were better against Jake Browning than Auburn was, the vaunted SEC, one of the vaunted SEC defenses. They allowed almost 300 yards passing by Jake Browning. We allowed 155. The rushing total was the potential weak spot. Washington rushed for 172. Auburn only allowed 102. But they also rushed it much more, 25% more times than they did against Auburn. So they had the ball longer against us than they did against Auburn. But very disappointing game. A lot of finger pointing. At the end of the day, we just didn't come focused, and I think that tells the story.
Yeah. All right. That's some interesting points as well. Very interesting points. All right. TC, give us your thoughts on the Utes game.
Well, it is a little comical to hear Ute fans complaining about targeting. given how the rivalry game went down a couple years ago when, two BYU players were ejected for much less egregious plays than what occurred Saturday night versus Washington. So I don't know. Call it karma. Call it poetic justice. But I mean, you got Pac-12 refs out there, so you just never know what's going to happen.
It's true.
That's what you live and die by, I guess. And unfortunately for Utah fans, they died by it on Saturday night.
I wouldn't say we live and die by targeting calls, but we did get we got the benefit a couple years ago against BYU, and we got burned.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, gosh, I just don't know what to think, because Utah did play Washington pretty well. K-Ray mentioned some defensive numbers that were pretty impressive, especially, you know, bottling up Browning and the passing game. This is a team that, you know, could have beaten Auburn. I think that game was down in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. So it was essentially a home game for Auburn. And so it's really hard to gauge, you know, just how disappointing of a loss this is, because I think the jury's still out on if Washington is legit or not. I mean, they're top 10, so you have to assume they are. And losing, I mean, it was a 2-score game, but let's be honest, it was, you know, it could have been just a one possession game. And that was one of the head scratchers that I just did not get. You know, Whittingham, known to be a very conservative coach, you know, after the fumble on the, what, the 11 yard line, they got down to the 4-3 and it was, you know, fourth down. And I thought for sure he was going to kick a field goal. And I thought that was a pretty critical mistake, because then the very next possession, they had the ball on, what was it, the, you know, the 20-yard line, give or take, and it was fourth and 19 or fourth and 13, something, and they go for it because now they're kind of boxed into a corner, whereas if they had kicked the field goal, they played conservative, they could have kicked another field goal and got it to a one-possession game. So that to me was the most surprising of the game. I get that the guy fumbled and you were so close and you just want to cash in. I think maybe 90% of the coaches make that same decision that Whittingham made, but man, I was surprised that Whittingham made that decision, because usually he's much more conservative, and it ended up costing him, I think, a chance to keep it close. So, you know, I don't think it was that poor of a game for Utah. Sorry, I had some audio issues there. I don't think it was that poor of a game for Utah. Now, I'll be interested to see how kind of BYU matches up in a couple weeks. I think BYU will not do as well bottling up the passing game as Utah did. And again, we can go over this next week in our predictions for the week forward, but I think that's a big weakness that BYU needs to correct, and it's one of apparently one of Utah's strengths if they were able to hold him even more so than Auburn did in the passing game. So I think there's actually, you know, quite a bit of positives that can come out of this, but I get it. It's a bye week. You lost a game that was kind of close, and I kind of feel for the U fans out there. It is kind of rough going into 2 weeks of this, but I will say BYU is ranked 25th, so it'll be a half of 2 weeks for us, assuming we can take care of McNeese State. But yeah, I was actually interested in a little talking a little bit more about the Covey play. I don't know what you guys thought about that, the general overall play, not one play, but you know, kind of K-Ray brought this up, how the coaches used him.
Yeah. So yeah, we talked on the last podcast about how the Utes need to use Covey more. Well, they sure tried to this game, but did they use him in the wrong way? Or is the guy just too small to play against, like, big Pac-12 teams? I mean, were the coaches sending him out to the slaughter? Well, give us your thoughts on that, K-Ray.
No, I don't know. I mean, like I said, he was the only guy making plays. So I can see why Tyler Huntley kept going to him. I do wish the coaches – he was clearly hurt. I wish the coaches would have said, hey – you know what? We've got plenty of other guys we can try to get the ball to. Why don't you take a series or two off here at the end of the game? Because he was clearly hurting. I'm sure they asked him, and I'm sure he said, "Put me back in," because that's him, right? That's Britton Covey, just guts and give it everything he's got. I would have said, "Hey, why don't you take these last couple of snaps off?" But he stayed in there till the bitter end. I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed. He was clearly hurt after some plays. He'd be holding his arm and he's limping, and so I'm wondering if the coaches just didn't see that, or you know, he's coming back saying, "No, I'm good." You know, it was pretty interesting. And I was the first one to say, you got to give him the ball as much as you can. So I don't know if it was, you know, like C Double said, I don't know if he just was in the wrong situations and that kind of exposed him a little bit more, or if just generally speaking, he's not going to hold up. But, you know, freak accidents happen, freak injuries happen to, you know, even the best of them. I remember Adrian Peterson playing for the Sooners. I mean, Coach Bob Stoops faced the same thing. Oh, you're using him too much. And his response was, look, you can get hurt on one play or you can get hurt on the 100th play. So, I mean, maybe the jury's still out on what he can do, but I still think he's Utah's best playmaker.
Yeah. I mean, I think the guy's too small. I think that's what it is. I mean, when you're that small and you're out there with these big guys, I mean, a normal hit is a lot. It's a lot more painful and it was a lot more damage to the body when you're smaller. So I think they're playing against a big Pac-12 team. I mean, your first two games weren't against some bigger teams. I mean, you got to call plays for him that lend to his strengths. You can't send him out into the middle of the field. I mean, you got to do some different type of plays. I mean, they were trying to, but it just wasn't working. So, yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Utah sending their injured players out there to keep going. I mean, Zach Moss was injured. They kept sending him out there. It's like, I don't get that. I mean, sit him down for a while. Let the trainers take a look. Let someone else get out there. I mean, sometimes those backups actually do well. And I didn't see him doing that. They kept putting their injured guys back out there. Didn't work too well.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how injured they were or how injured they are. You got to give the coaches the benefit of the doubt that they're not going to injure players on purpose. But it sure looked like Covey was hurting there at the end.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap up here, my final thoughts. Listen, I think Utah beat themselves, plain and simple. Washington played a great game, not taking anything away from them. But, I mean, Utah was trading blow for blow with them until the bad luck, you know, until basically some bad calls and some bad play caught up with them. But, I mean, listen, the targeting call against Marquise Blair, that was a momentum changer. Huntley's interception before the half, that was a total momentum killer. Yeah. I mean, that was a game changer.
Yep,
But, I mean, there were some bright spots, like TC said. The D-line by Utah was just atrocious. I mean, even with the second targeting call, which was just absolutely ridiculous, shouldn't have been called. I mean, even with some of their starters out, Utah's D was phenomenal. I mean, yeah, I said it was a rusty team last week, and it seems that they didn't put any oil on the machine. You know, they're still a rusty team. They got raw talent, but they're rusty. So I honestly think the bye week will be good for them. It's good for people to sit and have all those mistakes play over and over and over in their minds, because as a player, your sole goal is to go out there and do better. And I think they will. So, I mean, I think the bye week comes at an ideal time. As a fan, it sucks. You know, you're getting beat up over it for 2 weeks. But as a player, I think they'll come out and they'll come out an improved team here in 2 weeks.
Let's hope so. I like it. I like I like your spin on the bye week. That actually makes me feel better. Thank you. It really does.
All right. Well, that'll about wrap it up for us. We still want to talk about if UCF goes undefeated, how that's going to open the door for some smaller mid-major schools, but we just didn't have time this week. So next week we'll get into that. We'll get into some squabbles about the U and how University of Miami actually came up with that, according to TC.
Yeah, can you give me a break?
Jump into that.
Oh, hey, real quick, just for next week, McNeese State. I know a lot of people are looking past them, but hey, you know, you've had a couple upsets this year of football championship subdivision teams over football bowl division subdivision teams. I don't know why we call them that. That's stupid. Just call them Division One, Division Two. But don't want to look past them. They got a quarterback that can sling it pretty well, Tabari, and they spread the run game around a lot. But hoping we can build up a big league and actually get Wilson in to see what the kid's made of at least a little bit. But yeah, so we'll see. Maybe get some looks at some other players that haven't gotten much playing time.
Yeah. McNeese State. All right. So you're giving us a little bit of action on McNeese State.
Hey,
all right.
Real quick. Trivia question. Most famous McNeese State alum.
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Give us, are you going to answer that now or are you going to make us wait till next week?
I'll answer it now. Joe Dumars.
Oh, really? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I did not realize that. I don't think anyone did. Nice, nice. All right. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, the I mean, look, BYU's got a game this week, and I just want to say Utah does as well. It's actually the Utah women's soccer team hosts Oregon Friday night. So all Utes turn out to cheer on the Lady Utes, take on the Ducks. Thank you.
Oh man, don't make me delete that part of the podcast. That's embarrassing. I'm just messing with you. All right, that'll do it for this week. We're out, everybody. Peace.
Hey, number 25, baby. We're ready. Oh.